How do I manage my partner's mental illness?
Hey everyone, Stephanie Costello here, mom of three, wife, animal lover, and entrepreneur. My goal with this podcast is to share healthy intimacy skills. If you feel you are the only one struggling, I promise you are not alone. It's time to take action and make shit happen.
Recently, I was talking to a professional that I'm partnering with, and we are going to be doing this amazing group called Real Talk. And I was like, wow, I am naturally doing that and naturally having the 8% of the conversation that we often ignore because we're too nervous, too scared, our fears are eating us alive. And so today is a very real talk kind of conversation. Mental illness is something that is not easy to manage, especially when before it's even realized that it's an issue. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about my PTSD and how that has impacted my life, my parenting, my relationship, and even my work on some days. I got diagnosed with PTSD when I had Brody. That was almost 4 years ago now. And the last 4 years have been quite the struggle. Before I got diagnosed with PTSD, I was, you know, a new mom and I had Melody. We got pregnant pretty quickly after having Melody. She was only 10 months old when we got pregnant with Brody. And when I was you know, a new mom with Melody, the things that I was experiencing, I just thought were normal. I didn't know what to talk about or what to say. I knew how I was, like, feeling-wise, it just didn't feel good. But, you know, I just had a new baby. I'm changing, life has changed drastically, and I'm getting used to it. And then I had Brody, and oh my, it was not good at all. I definitely was like, this is not normal. I need to get help. And I always chalked it up to postpartum anxiety or postpartum depression, and it wasn't either of those. And poor Matt, dealing with it and seeing it, but not knowing either if it was normal or what it was. That time frame for us, like, we were so overly in love and joy with our babies that we kind of didn't really pay much attention to it when I was having moments. and the moments weren't necessarily, like, aggressive or dangerous or anything like that. It was just a deep emotional moment and we didn't know how to manage it on our own. This is why having a community in your life is so important, not just when you're having children, but when you're going through really anything and you're locked up in your house or you're not getting out of your bed or not going to work and doing the things that bring us around other people. That is very dangerous. That's when things are not good, and we don't want to leave people alone in their homes when they're dealing with certain illnesses or mental illness in general. The leaving them alone, if they really genuinely want their space, then they deserve their space, and be respectful of that. If they at that point in time can't receive the help you're trying to give them some space, but don't be cautionary on how much space, how long, and when is it appropriate to reach out to somebody who can really help your partner or somebody in your life with mental illness. If you're instincts, your vibrations are going off in your head, like, something's not right, I should do something, that is your intuition, and follow your gut. With that said, back to my PTSD, after I had Brody, I was like, okay, I need to get help. This is definitely not normal. And through the beginning of the healing journey and just really trying to wrap my head around what I was experiencing, I was not the best partner at all, and definitely not the best mom that I could be. I often get the title super mom. And for a while, it's like, yeah, I'm super mom. I'm hustling every day. I'm not sleeping. I'm barely eating. And I'm a, you know, nursing machine and all the things that we tag on as a healthy way of living when you become a new parent. And it's like none of those are healthy and none of those are normal. And so that title is a kind of a curse in some ways. When I had Melody and it was her and I, because I primarily stayed home for the last 5 years, I've worked part-time jobs here and there, plus I've been doing the business for a couple of years. And so the taking care of the kids was a pride and joy of mine, but it was like all of me, especially when it was just Melody. I was so in love with this little tiny human who was just giving me so much joy and so much happiness and watching her grow. But it also created an immense amount of anxiety. Going out places, going grocery shopping was really, really hard. I could only go at 7 o'clock in the morning when the store opened, and I had to have music on the entire time. I was such anxiety ridden. I avoided certain parts of the city. I didn't go out nearly as much as I should have. All the really intense signs that some help is needed. But again, we didn't know. And being a professional working in the mental health field and having a bachelor's in psych and Matt having a lot of medical knowledge, we didn't know how to confront the issue and work through the resistance. Once we had Brody, and then Mr. Brody has been a very sick little one for most of his life until recently when we got some more testing done. Finally, he's not sick anymore, which is so exciting, all because we changed his diet. But sidetrack there. Back to when he was, sick, that's a whole nother thing. Watching your child just lay there with IVs hooked up to them and the heart monitor thing going off all night long and the IV thing going off all night long, at 8 weeks old and then 18 months old and then again at 3 years old. And now it's like, oh, mommy, am I going to get pokes at the doctor? Or I don't want to go to the hospital because I'm scared, I'm going to die, or small stuff like that when, your four-year-old shouldn't be worrying about those things. And so it's, again, a constant trigger. How are you supposed to, as a mom, take care of yourself and not be worried about your surroundings and then try to take care of your human, and you have no control over whether their heart stops or not? And that is a very scary thing as a parent, something that they don't really teach or talk about before anyone becomes a parent, sicknesses or anything like that. So PTSD or, any mental health issues that people have, these are not easy things to cope with, manage, overcome. And I'll share a little bit about the stages of change. The stages of change, the first stage is pre-contemplation. And that's the stage where we have no idea that there's a problem. And that's kind of where I was when I had Melody. Like, I guess I kind of knew there was a problem, but I just didn't know what it was. So I was more in contemplation of like, wow, this kind of sucks. Is there a problem here? And then there'd be other days where I'm like, nope, no problem. I'm perfectly fine. Like, everything's fine. I'm just going to shove it all under the rug. And so you can go back and forth in the stages of change of between pre-contemplation, contemplation, and then the next one is where you're realizing there is a problem and you're like, okay, I need to take care of this. Oh, planning. Then the next one is action, and you're taking action, you're fixing the problem, you're working on it, and then do over. We go through these stages over and over, and sometimes we go back and forth. Once we accomplish one problem, then something else might come up. And that is a story of life. Oftentimes we get to the top of a mountain and we're like, I'm free. And then all of a sudden it starts to rain. And you're like, what the fuck? We just took care of this. Why is this coming up again and again and again? And with good, there's bad. And with bad, there's good. Really, what's most important is just learning to roll with the punches of any type of specific diagnosis that a partner might have. And some diagnoses are specific to the time frame in life, like postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety. Those are typically right after having a baby and then fade after a certain time period. PTSD, my symptoms are pretty much non-existent. Like, nightmares aren't a thing anymore. I don't avoid streets or areas of certain places and where I live. I don't avoid interactions with people. Even when I might feel some sort of anxiety, I still confront it. Recording these podcasts, I don't sit there and, you know, wallow in my fear. I might feel the fear and then I'm like, you know what, this shall pass too, and I work through it. But it's taken me a really long time to get there. It's taken me lots of counseling and coaching and communication, strife. It's been quite an up and down road. Poor Matt can watch me, you know, being a partner and watching our partners in their strugglesome moment is one of the hardest things to do. We can see it happening. We can see it in their head, what's going on, the storm that's brewing in their head. But it's like, what do we do? How do we reach out? How do we help this situation? And as a partner, one of the biggest things to remember is it's not our responsibility to necessarily fix what's going on. It's our responsibility to be there and be supportive through it. And whether that's a rub on the back, a hug, a kiss, something that we have communicated with each other on how to ground each other. And, you know, when we were newly getting diagnosed, we didn't know what to do. So I'm saying it like it's the easiest thing to do, and it really is not the easiest thing to learn how to manage this new challenge in any life. And you never know when these challenges come on. It can come on from the death of a parent or a deadly diagnosis, a new mental illness diagnosis, whatever it is, something that when we met our partner, this wasn't a problem, and then it became a problem because of some sort of life, you know, interaction, or we were just young and didn't realize how much more to life there really was, which was sort of our situation. So the hard parts about being a partner and watching your partner go through it, making sure you're taking care of yourself and getting yourself the help you need. And if the relationship is not two-sided, then bless and release. If you're being neglected, if your needs are being neglected and you're not getting the emotional support you deserve as a partner, just because you took an oath to be there for life doesn't mean you took an oath to be abused for life as well. And so if there's a significant amount of either, you know, drugs or alcohol or physical abuse, verbal abuse, mental illness, if you're being held back because your partner is not managing their mental illness healthily, you do have a right to get your own support. And if breaking away from the relationship is the best option for your health, then it needs to be done. That is one of the most challenging decisions or thought process to even have. It's not an easy place to be. There's a lot of guilt and a lot of fear that comes up in those type of conversations or thoughts that we have that, you know, how are we going to afford to live on our own? Or what about the children? What about the finances, the house, the cars, the friends, the family? What is your family going to think? All of the different pieces to a life that we share and that we were building with our partner. We invested so much time and we were so in love with our partner when we first met them. And, you know, how can this be going the way it is? All of the questions. And that's why having your own support with somebody who is a non-biased opinion. So I'm going to touch a little bit upon therapists or counselors or coaches, depending on what your preference is. These people are being paid to be a non-emotionally committed person into this relationship. So if you're in counseling, it is very important that your counselor, therapist, or coach are not emotionally invested in the situation. So when you are in your emotional brain, which is your hippocampus and your amygdala, you do not have the ability to make sound decisions. But in order to make sound decisions with your thinking brain, which is your frontal lobe, you have to get through your emotional brain. And working with somebody while you're in your emotional brain to bring you, like, process through your emotions and then bring you back to your frontal lobe so you can really make a sound decision and not a decision based on fear or any other type of really intense emotion that we experience, then that's where you need somebody who can reframe it for you. And a healthy counselor, therapist, or coach will not sit there and say, I feel you should do this because this is what I would do. That is not necessarily a healthy way of communicating. And something I am so very grateful for is my counselor for the last 3 years has really been she's been a great example of what, when I'm in my, you know, emotional brain, and even like we're human, I've had reactions towards her and I'm like, I'm feeling this way and it's hindering my growth and I need to talk about it. And she's usually like, yeah, it's okay. You're valid in how you feel. And she'll help me process through it. And it's completely not a huge stressful situation. And I feel like that's how relationships should be. We should be able to vocalize our feelings and receive the help that we deserve from anybody that we're in a relationship with. Not necessarily receive the help, that I said that wrong. We should be able to be vulnerable and open to hearing each other's words and hearing each other's feelings. And even if we can't fix them, we can at least validate and accept them and figure out, you know, compromise and collaborate with each other to try to get to a common ground. And that's with illness, mental illness or not, there are always ways to collaborate and work together as a team. Because essentially that's what you are at the end of the day, is a team with lots of different hats, and some hats can conflict with other hats. But, I'll touch a little bit upon hats, like parenting hat, self hat, work hat, I can't even, you know, daughter hat, father hat, that whatever type label you have in your life, those are different hats that you wear. And sometimes, like as a mom, I may want to go do something for myself. And it's like, but the kids have some sort of activity. So those are two conflicting hats that I wear. I need to take care of myself, absolutely. But the kids' activity is also just as important. So, I have to make sure that I'm doing a really good balancing. It's definitely like balancing a bunch of balls. Sometimes they all fall and it's a big mess, but you learn from that big mess and you don't let it affect you again, or you try not to at least. So I'm going to end there, and please like, subscribe, or share. In the show notes, there is a survey. I am giving away some 30-minute sessions, so please fill it out, and I will reach out to you as soon as I can. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to hearing from you. Bye.